When you say us, tell us besides yourself, who are the people involved?
Well, there were some poets, but basically it was in origin. Okay, so anyway, in late 1970s, I began to sign my books when I bought a book about the region, Cascadia. So I taught the first class in 1980, and then again 1981, 82 at Seattle University on Cascadia. And then we did, a friend and I, Jim Riley, at what was called the Chinook Learning Center, now it's the Whidbey Institute, and taught a course on Cascadia there. And actually that was pretty influential because it had a whole bunch of people who were young, educated, progressive, searching for a new kind of home and an ideal. And we provided an aegis, and they actually spread the word quite a bit. And then I spoke and we spoke and other people spoke, gave talks all over. And then we sponsored, in a tremendous burst of energy, a whole series of conferences from 1985, 86, 87, 88, 90, 91, 93 to 95. There were 8 to 10 conferences, bioregional conferences, in basically in the Puget Sound area, but we had one down here. And the Cascadia Bioregional Congress got the Ish River Confluence, Pacific Cascadia in 1985. Peter Moulton and his friends down at Evergreen in 1985. Peter Berg and others came up at Bellingham and gave a talk on mapping, which I went to, and Peter and I became friends. And that was had quite an influence in Bellingham. Then in 1986, the Evergreen folks, God, they were a tremendous crew down there, Peter Moulton, Rusty Post, a whole bunch of guys, Reese Roth, organized, along with our help, the first Cascadia Bioregional Congress in 86 at Bellingham, at Evergreen. We had the poets there, the Ish River poets. And I made a special effort to get, there were 4 or 5 of them there. And so
Robert Sund.
Well, Doug Dobbins, Tim McNulty, Tom Jay, and Robert Sund. And I introduced them, and that was one of the first linkages directly of poetry to the bioregional and Cascadia.
You know, you're talking about the guys from the old days, and you've mentioned all men, and yet it was a woman who is a key player in your own understanding of Cascadia and bioregionalism and your own inspiration to dig deeper into this issue, and that's Tanya Atwater.
Well, she's at a far remove. I've never met Tanya Atwater. That'd be quite an honor. We're now back into the unfolding of the geological story, the new earth poetry of that. And the connection there is that instead of doing abstractions or fictions or utopias, the story that began to unfold through the new geology got to be more fabulous every month. Every year it was just another revelation. Talk about living through a Newtonian revolution. It just was fabulous. And Tanya Atwater was a major player in this. In 1970, she was a graduate student, and she wrote a paper on the Farallon's plate. And the Farallon's plate is the mother plate of Cascadia. It was the plate that gave rise to the Kula plate and the Farallon's plate. And these sound kind of like abstractions, but if you understand plates as these fairly rigid platforms, and then the subduction zones, the ocean trenches, and the Farallon's plate was this giant Pacific plate that became as the story went then. The story is different now, and that's another great thing. As I said once to you, that the best poets that I know really are the young geologists. They have the most fabulous imaginations I have ever seen. All the rest of us are just so stuck in convention. You read their stuff and talk to them, hear them, and you go, no, that can't be true. One time I told a friend that the Olympic mountains hadn't always been there, that they were rafted or accreted in from the Pacific. And that they were shaped like a horseshoe, and you can go up there and pick off a slate off the top of some of them. And he said, no, they're not. They've always been there. They've always been there in his lifetime or his imagination. So anyway, Tanya Atwater wrote this seminal paper of plate tectonics. And I want to emphasize that Cascadia and the dynamics of our seafloor played a crucial role, not complete, but a very important role in the plate tectonics revolution, which is ongoing. So she gave us a myth of this Ur plate here, who's been largely subducted, was created Western North America in large part, and whose fragments are the remnant microplates, the Gorda, Juan de Fuca, and Explorer plate, which go from Cape Mendocino up to Vancouver Island. So just go back. So the search was for an authentic name that really says what it does and does what it says, that grounds us in the life of the place, that has an evocative power. And that's a crucial thing. Not just description or make a map that's merely describes or is accurate. You want something that not just informs, but transforms, flames, and transfigures. That's what we're after here. And Cascadia has this resonance that almost seems transcendental. That generations now, for over 100 and almost 20 years now, people have been dreaming, or rather, turn it around, Cascadia has been dreaming through us and various generations. Now, I came on the scene in the late 70s, and we had this dalliance with Ecotopia and this dalliance with Pacific Rim and the rest of it. But when I got Cascadia, and we began to bore in and see that it spoke to the place, to the dynamism of the place, it's as if the resonant set up this field of evocative power that then began to speak back through us. And I'm convinced, even though I might be the proximate source and much of the articulator of it, that the dynamism comes from the place itself. That is, the spirit of the place speaks through us, and that's why we're pursuing this, and that's why it has almost infinite depth. It just keeps unfolding. And to me, that's the poesis, which is the breaking into being through meaning. And so, even though I'm talking a lot here, the first thing I try to help people learn is to learn to listen to the place and the life of the place so that it can speak through us. So I've got this kind of mantra. If you would speak for the place, then the question is, well, what does the place say to you? And if it doesn't say anything, why should we listen to you? If the place, however, speaks to you and through you, then we have an opening into a future.